Well, today's show is dedicated to those who have been in the military and those who still are in the military, and from their perspective, how they feel today.
Oh, my name, it means nothing. And my age, it means less. For the country I come from is called the Midwest. I was taught and brought up to the laws to abide, and that the land that I live in has God on its side. All the history books tell it, they tell it so well. The cavalry's charge and the Indians fell. The cavalry's charge and the Indians died. Oh, the country was young then, with God on its side. The Spanish American war had its day, and the Civil War to us was soon laid away, and the names of the heroes I was made to memorize, with guns in their hands and God on their side. The First World War boys, it came and it went, and the reason for fighting I never did get. But I learned to accept it with pride. For you don't count the day it went, God's on your side. In the 1960s came the Vietnam War. Can someone tell me what we were fighting for? So many young men died, so many mothers cried. Now I ask the question, was God on our side? I learned to hate the Russians all through my whole life. If another war comes, it's them we must fight. And to hate them and fear them, to run and to hide, and accept it all bravely, with God on my side. Through many talk hours. I've been thinking about this, that Jesus Christ was betrayed by a kiss. But I can't think for you, you'll have to decide whether Judas Iscariot had God on his side. Oh, now as I'm leaving, I'm weary as hell. The confusion I'm feeling, ain't no tongue can tell. The words fill my head and they fall to the floor. That if God's on our side, he'll stop the next war. Jesus loves me, this I know.
With God on our side. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and it is Memorial Day. And I thought that we will honor those among us who, for so many years, have really never said what's in their minds and hearts about their service to the country. And the loss of loved ones in the milieu of war. What is in your mind today? And I want to give them preference today, those who have served or currently serving in any branch of the U.S. military, and families of loved ones lost to war, who may wish to acknowledge and honor them today. Honor their memory and what you remember best of them. People talking about their experiences in war or in the military. You are most welcome to call in and share your thoughts today at 888-874-4888. You know, usually when we talk about war, it is on the basis of being opposed to war. We talk about the uselessness of war. We talk about instead working for peace. But we seldom talk about the impact of war and serving in the military, preparing for war, the impact it has on those who are in the military or those who are preparing to go into the military, those who have lost members of their family to war. On this day, what do you wish to say? How has this experience called Memorial Day, what does it bring to you? To your mind? What feelings do you harbor on a day like this? How do you recall those that you know who are still around and who may have been so deeply affected by war that they are no longer themselves? Or maybe you have been through the experience of war and coming out of it, you are connected to the transformation that it caused you, it brought about in you. And what is that like? We don't know from the outside we really don't know how it feels. Loss. A strange kind of anger in that you are being trained to, quote, bring democracy, freedom and democracy to others, when you are clear it's not quite realized at home. What are you thinking today? Let's talk about that. Again, members of the military, I invite you to call in and share with us your thoughts today. And we will listen. We will hear you. And in doing so, you will educate us about things that we seldom hear about or see. The silent impact of war on you and those you love. The way that this experience distorts in some way, dramatically changes your life. And perhaps you've never shared it with anybody. You've never told anybody how you felt and how you still feel today. Perhaps you are from a family that has lost a loved one. How does that make you feel today? We're talking more on a human level today and less on an ideological level. We're talking about the human impact. How does it feel either to be in service or to be in a family who has lost someone? What are you thinking of? What is your Memorial Day tribute today? Lincoln from New York, you're on the air.
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air, Lincoln.
Yeah, how are you? This is Lincoln.
Yes.
Yes.
Could you talk directly into your phone because we're getting a terrible echo?
Yeah, sorry. My phone was accidentally on the speaker mode. Hello?
Yes. What are your thoughts?
I have served in the U.S. military.
No, and, I want to know. This is, we're doing something a little bit different today.
No, I'm here.
Are you connected? Are you connected to someone? Are you yourself someone who has been to war?
Yes. And that's why I'm telling you like it is. Still have a friend who was in Vietnam. As a matter of fact, one of the things I got up thinking about is him. And we have actually had discussions on his time in Vietnam. And I think we do ourselves a discredit, even when you're looking at the pain of the loss. Like in my conversation with this particular friend of mine, who spent time in Vietnam, I just didn't sit there and hold his hand and cry. I spoke with him about the history of Vietnam and how the USA got into it. And I think that it will not be productive if we just sit and cry and say, oh, I have a friend who died from... You can be considered... You can empathize with them, but you still have to stay logical. And it's just like being about to be in a fight with someone. And if you just give in to just the passion alone, you will fight. But if you stop and say, let's think, let's talk about this. I mean, like I was talking to a young girl one day, and she was on her way off to Iraq. This is when Bush was doing that wrong war. And I pointed that out to them, and she said to me, well, I'm not going to die. So I said, oh, you don't mind the fact that you're going there to kill in a wrong war. All you care about is that you're not going to die. And I think it's wrong for us to be just sitting here talking about, I have someone who died in a war. You went to a war to go kill innocent people. Let's deal with that also. And if you're not dealing with that, then to me, just sitting there crying about who you knew was in Vietnam, it's not productive.
Well, it's not a matter of what is productive or what is not productive. Here's the thing. Those are human feelings just the same, and you are meeting them at their level while you are at your level. The question is, don't berate them for the level at which they're functioning. They're still dealing with it. They still are going through a moment in their lives. And they may have to grow into looking at things, but then they may not have to if they choose not to. The question is, they are experiencing this particular period in their lives in a particular way. They may be in denial, but that is not the issue, is it? The issue is, here you are encountering people and they're encountering you at two different points in their lives, simply because you have a greater appreciation of history or geopolitics. It doesn't matter. What it boils down to is that you are at a particular point in your life where you can see the intersection between what they know and what the system is about to do to them. So in any event, it doesn't really change, you know, it doesn't change what will happen. It doesn't change what will happen. So on a day like this, you know, every now and then you dispense with the political side of things and you just are human. What is the human experience today? No matter what deficiency people may have going to war or being in a war, what is the thought today about that experience?
Hello?
What do you think? Yeah, I'm listening.
Okay. I'm going to just say this, and I'm going to make an analogy. Let's say, we have to stay objective. And to stay
we don't
objective,
have, listen, let me
second,
just
second,
let
second.
Me just say this. We don't have to do anything. What about just saying, wherever you are, right this minute in your trajectory of growth is fine. Wherever I am in my trajectory of growth is fine. We don't have to do anything except be what we are in the moment and appreciate what has made us, what has put us here. We don't have to do anything. Because what you're saying is people have a duty to be where you want them to be. And yet, that's not the way human beings are. We are who we are when you meet us. So start with that. She is going to war. She has a view of that. It's neither right nor wrong. It just is what it is. And if you wish to engage with that young lady, you're going to have to adjust to the fact that she may not be where you want her to be at the moment you encounter her, but that doesn't mean that you have to force her to see the light. Maybe she never will. But the dynamic is in the moment that your path crosses hers. What good comes out of it? That's the thing. How does she change you? Not how do you change her? That's the way I see it.
Hello?
Yes, I'm listening.
There would be no good coming out of it if I, after hearing her saying that, and if after I showed her the reason for going to the war, don't get me wrong, I'm not going to be angry at her, but I still think I should have engaged her in a conversation. Otherwise, it wouldn't make sense to me. I'll give you one last example. Let's say a policeman Let's say a policeman kills someone, an innocent person, and then that policeman, he's killed. And then his family's crying about him. And I say, okay, I hear your pain, you miss him, but what about the people he killed? For example, I knew a lady, right?
But Lincoln, you're kind of off the trajectory here. We're talking about how do people in the situation feel today? Not hypothesizing, but how do they actually feel today? Those who have served in the military, those who have lost loved ones who have served in the military, how do they feel today? We could always pick up the conversation on the ideological front, but today is more, I want to hear from the heart how people are feeling today. So we'll catch up. Thanks for calling in and getting us started today. Dwight from Newark, you're on the air.
Yes, good afternoon, Yatrice.
Good afternoon to you.
How are you today?
I'm hanging in, trying to sound as vibrant as you.
I want you to hang tough, Yatrice. We're all rooting for you. And I would also like to extend a welcome to the PRN listening audience and subset that to the Yatrice Lee listening audience.
Oh, thank you.
Okay, Yatrice, my comments are going to be a mixture of ideological and also the personal view, because I think that you can't divorce the ideological from how people would feel about war. Now, what I'm looking at with your question today, I think about three individuals. I think about Dwight Eisenhower, and when he talked about beware the military complex. I think about Muhammad Ali, who resolutely refused to go to the war because it sent all the wrong signals, and it was at war against people who hadn't basically done anything to Ali himself. And then I think about Smedley Butler, who calls war a racket. And then I think about those three things, and I think about why these people, and they're basically marginalized people. I remember when I was in college, Yatrice, I got a waiver from the conscription because I was in college. Now, that kind of tells you and stratifies things that, hey, if you're in college or if you're working towards a class or upward mobility, you know, you were given a pass, but for the poor people and the more marginalized individuals, those are the ones that go into war for the wrong reasons. A lot of times for economical reasons, because there aren't any jobs, there aren't any prospects of jobs. So the army or one of the military forces is a option for those people. Now, when I look back at the people when they once they come home from war, how ingratiated are they by the country? I mean, on Gary Noah's show, he has a lot of contact with veterans, and he talks about how the government is not there for them when they come back. They talk about how they go suffer through post-traumatic shock syndrome and all this stuff. And the government and the Veterans Administration just aren't there for those people. And the homelessness, you know, the psychological evaluations that they need, and just the care that they need. And the government just isn't there for those people. And then you have to contrast the people who go to war and fight these wars and the people who really make out and get the who the benefits are basically for. They aren't for us. They aren't for the average man. We're fighting these wars so that the corporations and the people that are in power can remain in power.
No question. I have no argument there. Your points are quite solid. Have you been in the military at all?
No, you, Teresa, not. My feeling is I would do everything not to go into the military. And the gentleman that just spoke, If some young person was contemplating going into the military and I was having a conversation with them, I would call on every bit of history that I could muster up people the understanding that, hey, you aren't fighting for the war. I mean, you aren't fighting for the just causes and the talking points that the Democratic Party and the Republican Party tell you. You aren't fighting for patriotism. You aren't fighting for humanity. You aren't fighting for the democratic principles. You are fighting to help the powers that be continue stealing natural resources and the powers that be to remain in power. That's what we're fighting for.
Well, I thank you for your opinion today. Let's see how people react to it. Thank you, Noel, for calling in.
No, this is Dwight.
I mean, Dwight, sorry.
Noel,
you on the air from Brooklyn.
I want to start off with my father, who came from your country in Trinidad. He actually came through Ellis Island. He was drafted into the United States Army in 1942. I remember him talking about he was coming from a dance and he was drafted. At that time, what I didn't mention to you in the PRN audience was my father was in New York University in the 1940s. That was almost impossible. He was a theater major. He suffered through Hitler's war. If any of you, Utrice, do you remember watching Private Ryan?
No.
Okay, well, there's a scene in Private Ryan, if you can. The war scene when they landed in Normandy Beach in France. If you just watch that part, then you'll see what my father literally said. He saw men's hair turn gray in front of them. There's a scene where Steven Spielberg showed where guys were walking around with their arms that were blown off in circles because they were in shock. He went through all of that. Now, to conclude about my father who served, when he came back from the war, he was still called the N-word, nigger. He wanted to work for the then, I don't know what the Transit Authority was called back in those days. And for those around the country, I'm talking about the New York City Transit Authority. He was only allowed to become a porter, a person to clean up, was not allowed to continue his drama education because that's what he went to NYU for. And the same Jews, not saying I'm not castigating all Jews, but the same Jews that he helped to relieve from concentration camps, their ancestors or whatever, when he came back here, would not allow him in the theater industry. Now, myself, I did serve the United States Air Force. I would disagree with what the person said because there are combative portions of the military, Utrice. I don't know if you know this, and they're non-combative. For example, non-combative people are people like chaplains or somebody like myself that I was a medical person. Now, I learned you could probably put a doctor on the phone right now, and I could talk the same language, and I have the same knowledge that I learned from the United States military. I learned it, and I think it was excellent training that I received. Do I understand what the whole situation is about me fighting for Dow Chemical and the rest of them? Yes. But I believe that some of us could go in, get the education that we needed, and then you could get out. So I conclude with that, unless you have any other questions for me.
No, I think you laid it out quite well. And this is really a nice insight, a nice portrait that combines immigration, a desire to move up, and given the social situation at the time.
Yes, ma'am.
You know, for a lot of people, it was a logical move to go into the military, but
yes,
they did not escape the social downsides.
Right, and I and one other thing that just popped in my mind too, for those listening around the country and around the world, there's something called a commissary. The commissary is like a supermarket for the military. So everybody understands that. And I'll repeat it again so people understand. The Germans who were captive here in the United States, especially the South, were allowed commissary privileges. The black soldiers who were fighting Hitler were not.
fact.
I tell you, lots to learn.
Yes,
thank
ma'am.
You, Noel,
thank you
for that little bit of history there. Thank you so much for contributing. Gwen from New York, you're on the air. What are your thoughts on this Memorial Day?
It's really touching. The music was gorgeous, and I think that you are moving in the spirit of the day. It is a Memorial Day for the people that died. And I wanted to say that my grandfather was in World War One and France with the chemical weapons. My father was a bomber pilot in World War II. His airplane was hit, and at 17 years old, he had to jump out of a burning airplane while being fired at. He did not get injured. He survived. But to this day, he has nightmares, horrible nightmares, violent nightmares, and it's never been resolved. He's come very close to having an alcohol problem because the pressure of never releasing this, because this is an innocent young man who was very, very poor from the Depression in the South and who was about to enter the military voluntarily to escape poverty when the whole playing field changed and Roosevelt said we were going to war. And so then he was drafted into it. The last person I want to mention is my hero husband, who is not with us anymore. But my husband is a black man who was in the United States Marine Corps. And the Marine Corps was one of the worst experiences for him, as it was for my grandfather also and my uncle. All three of them, the Paris Island, was terrible experience, very, very hard and harsh. But what I want to tell you is that all four of these men came back, and all four of these men are brave and willing to step up to the plate and not murderers. And circumstances push people in a certain direction often, or sometimes there's no choice whatsoever. But these are all men of humility, and all of them landed at the same place, and that was to say that war is a very bad thing. My father will tell you today that he doesn't see going to war for almost any reason whatsoever, and that these experiences truly change people's lives. My father told me that as he dropped the bombs out at the people, he said, you can see them below. And he said, but then you can smell the burning flesh coming back into the airplane. And he said, I always wondered if that guy in the plane across from me had a family like I did at home. And he said, I just felt bad about it. And so I think that today, instead of bombing out the idea of Memorial Day, that we just really should be sensitive to the people that served and realize that many of them, many people never had a choice in serving, and that they did serve with dignity, and we should be giving them the respect today.
So you had many different kinds of instructions from people you knew who served in the military. How did
yes.
this impact you?
I'm an activist. I remember I was so excited when I – first of all, speaking of Clinton, I just want to just – why I bring that up is when President Clinton came to the 92nd Street Y and announced that he supported the war in Iraq, I was shocked. But then I went downstairs, and then I lined up, and I guess he thought he was going to talk to some nice blonde girl, and I just went out after him full force. I told him, I said, if you want to be a Republican, you need to join that party. But you came here tonight, and we thought you were going to support not bombing Iraq. But that's where my dander – well, I've always been an anti-war activist, but I'm not old enough to be in the Vietnam War. So – the first protest I attended was against the Iraq War. So I became an activist for that. And I have to say that it was so exciting going to Washington, D.C. to take a stand. I felt like a real human being that was actually doing something, taking an action to say, no, you shall not. And it was very disappointing because I think this is probably the first time that everything changed as far as the media. And when the media doesn't show a protest, then a protest doesn't really matter. And there were millions of people there that day. It was 6 degrees. I remember we stayed the entire day. It was 6 degrees. But I felt very, very good about that. And so I myself am opposed to wars. I also met a young lady who is working and so poor even with this job, that she told me she was going to join the military. But I did not yell at her or chastise her. It was simply a matter of, I can't make it. I need to finish college, and I have a kid. I have to raise this kid. And I just spoke to her, frankly, from the point of view of a mother. Because if I was a mother, I think I would do almost anything to prevent my child from going in and wasting his life for some big, gigantic company to make more money for the people at the top. That's not a good enough reason to me to go to war. And in today's day and age, when there is a lot of resources out there for people to understand how war really works, I feel that at least I should have an obligation to try to talk them out of it, but never to humiliate a person for making the choice. Remember that these are literally children.
I think that is a very strong point, and it's never emphasized enough. We should be able to distinguish, like you did today, the awkward positions that many people were in, and to distinguish that and separate that from the system that used them up for so many awful things, killing people and destroying the land and all kinds of manner of suffering that they brought upon people all over the world. But thank you very much, Gwen, for contributing today. Suppose we hear from Marie of Baltimore. Hello, Marie.
Hello
what
again.
Thank you. What are your thoughts today on Memorial Day?
Well, I think back at my great uncle when I was a tiny tot living in another state, and that he came back to the United States as a drunk, and understood from family members that he was straight when he went to got into the army, but he just came back a total drunk. And one of my great aunts said of him that he fought very hard in the foxholes. I think that's the term they used back then.
Yes.
And then when he also came home, some of my relatives didn't want to be bothered with them. They were adults, you know. And so he was sent to live with Mom and me and grandmother. Now, Mom, I wasn't even 4 years old at the time. I might have been three or two or something. I can't remember. Thinking of a young African-American woman who didn't have an executive job, taking care of a household of a grandmother and me and this uncle who was drunk for a short period of time. And I look at the situation right now, where we are today, where the government wants to cut programs and social services and stuff like that, and instead give money to the military. And that's about all I have to say.
You're saying that you gave us a snapshot of how the military experience for your uncle was one that reduced him and reduced his character.
Yes.
Did he ever regain solid footing for any period of time once he came home?
No, because he drank so much that he didn't live as long as he could have been. He was my grandmother's brother, and they were close in age, but he never, I don't think, if he got to 50, I don't think so. You know, I'm just sort of thinking about in the past, there's nobody around now to give me information, but I don't think he made it to age 50. Maybe not even age 40. And so he died miserably, in my opinion. And, this war, our wars are damaging to people. And then we have now sort of a war going on in this country, a domestic type of a war, which you already know about.
Yes.
Different places around the country. And I just wonder how things are going to continue right now.
Do you ever think of your uncle from time to time, and what the loss was, not just of his life, but also of to the family as a whole?
Well, he was my great uncle, and I just remember that some of the adults in the family didn't want to be bothered with him, and he was placed on my mom's shoulder. Mm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And she's a working mother, and divorced, by the way.
Well, you're telling us about the stresses that we sometimes don't even consider, the stresses of war, where here he is, very different from the way he left. He returns with this incredible problem, and it in turn takes a toll on your family. So you see how it works. In trying to help and accommodate him and so forth, you have the extra pressure now on the part of your mother to help take care of him.
That's
a very interesting story and a sad one, but it's a real one. Thank you so much.
Thank you, dear.
Thank you. David from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Utrice.
Hello.
As you probably know, I was in the military. I was officer in the military. And when I was a young person, well, most of my brothers also were in the military. And when I was a young person, the idea was that you were going to defend your country and that sort of thing, you know. That's why you go to the military, because you're serving to defend your country. And going to regular schools and colleges and so forth, you don't learn the truth is that quite often when you go to war, you're going to defend capitalism and imperialism all over the world. And that's, I think, a takeaway lesson that a lot of people need to learn about, that it is not in the interest of going to war thinking you're defending the country or defending yourself and so forth. That's not why you went to Libya or Iraq or Afghanistan. It is in the interest of those at the very top who run this place, and it benefits their imperialism and their capitalism, and that's why you're going to war. The other thing that comes to mind as we have this day is how rotten the government here treats its veterans. Now, I'm a veteran, and there are lots of other veterans who are treated pretty shabbily. During the Bush administration, I think it's important for everybody to know, they changed the rules about getting a Veterans Administration health service. When Bush came in, he cut out 800,000 veterans from having health care at the Veterans Administration. They passed a new way to ditch those veterans so you can't go to the veterans hospital. Before that, I would go to the Veterans Hospital occasionally, but after I didn't go for a while, they just found a way to cut out 800,000 veterans, which I think is still in effect today. You know, other countries where they do have a military, I believe the Japanese during after the Second World War and the Germans, as far as I know, they have given every veteran a pension. Over here, I don't think that is the case. So the point is that also in the military, the same system of white supremacy, racism that exists all over the country is carried all over the world. Anywhere you go where the military people, they carry the same things over to those other places. And, you know, I was stationed in Japan and Okinawa and places like that. And I saw even the local people picking up white supremacy habits in terms of how black troops were treated. So the military takes its racism wherever it goes, and it's in effect in the military as well in civilian society. But the point that I'm making is you're not always going in the military to defend your country, and that is important. It's a matter of serving the interests of those who rule.
Thank you. There is no quarrel here on your score. No quarrel on it at all. Thank you so much, David, for calling in.
Thank you.
Ali from New York, you're on the air.
Hi, you, Therese. How are you doing?
Okay. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. I have one nephew who is on the Air Force, and I do agree with that gentleman that when people of color, black, Latinos, they go there, they should go in to learn something and then come out. Right now, he's learning to be a mechanic, which he's in Qatar right now because, you know, they have a few bases there. And, you know, with this thing that they wanted to attack Iran, and they have, that's what he's doing. He's learned how to be a mechanic, and that is what he's doing, fixing airplane. But this is the story that I wanted to tell, and I know I don't have that much time. And I did call at one time, and I explained. I have a nephew, and the first nephew that I told you in the Air Force, my sister only child, okay? This other nephew is for my younger brother. This nephew is the same age as my son. As a matter of fact, his birthday is going to be June 12th. He's going to be 27. And the story was that he did something. At one time, the cops stopped him, and he had a small knife. And the other friend, they start running. That was on Broadway and 145th Street. And he got caught. He didn't run. They stopped him. They found this little tiny knife, and they had a case for him. He was in high school. Then right here on the state park that we have here on 145th Street, it's a state park, he was playing basketball. And then when he finished, you know how boys are, he jumped and he hit one of the signs. Nothing happened to the sign, but that's a state park. So there, they have another case against him. This is how the U.S. Army got my nephew. Let me tell you something. This nephew, what he did when he got to Afghanistan, he started reading about because he was 18 years old. So he learned and he started reading about all this information about why they were in Afghanistan. He didn't really fight, but one of the things that my nephew did was to pick up pieces, human pieces, head, arms, legs. This had destroyed my nephew. My nephew takes, if you see the medication that my nephew is taking, it's unbelievable. He can't sleep. He hasn't been able to sleep. But not only that, when he came back, because he learned so much about what is going on around the world, especially with this war, he used to talk to the other soldiers, and he got in trouble for that. So after he completed his contract, he left the Army, and you know what they do? They give you honorable discharge and dishonorable discharge. So he got one of those. When he came back, he was in such a bad shape that he took the Army. He fought it, and he won. My nephew is going to be 27, and he's getting a check for the rest of his life because of the condition that he's left, mentally and physically. 2 weeks ago, he just had another operation on the neck, a neck operation. My nephew, 27, and mentally, he's not right. He is right sometimes, but there another time, he doesn't want to shave. He doesn't want to bathe. He looks like sometimes like a homeless person. Because mentally, and that was the worst thing that happened. When did we find out that he was going? The night before, because not even the Army made sure that they convinced the wife, the Commonwealth wife, and they were, you know, she had full custody of my nephew, and then he was 18. So therefore, my nephew could sign. My brother was not aware We were aware the night before. And when we called up, Staten Island, that's where they put them, we couldn't even get in touch. And the sergeant who answered the phone told us that he didn't know where he was, but he knew about what happened to him with those two cases. This is how my nephew got to. Unfortunately, he's in the bad shape, but one of the things that is very strange is that he knows he's in bad shape and mentally and all that, but then he said he doesn't regret it, that he had gone to the Army. It's really, really a bad case. I don't think my nephew, with the amount of medication that he's taken, he's going to be around for years to come. I just doubt it very much. That's what I wanted to tell you.
Thank you, Ali, for your story. It's a very sad story. But again, these are the stories we don't hear about. We don't know about these things. And it's a privilege today. I'm so pleased to have had some kind of time to devote to discussing the impact of war on people in so many ways. And of course, we are just touching the surface of it. But maybe we can pick this subject up later on in the week and see how it goes. Stay tuned. Coming up next, Meditations and Molotovs with Vincent Emanuele. You can reach me via email at leadstories, leidstories@gmail.com. Let me know how you think about this program. All right. A pleasure always and a great privilege to be in your company. We'll see each other tomorrow. Bye-bye.
In my age, it means less. For the country I come from is called the Midwest. I was taught and brought up to the laws to abide, and that the land that I live